Well, good morning, Central. My name is Luke Miedema. I'm the pastor of Grace Church of the Roaring Fork Valley in a small town in the mountains of Colorado called Basalt. It's been a few years since I have preached here, but it's always just a gift to join you guys in worship. So let me start by saying thank you. Jason's been a good friend and a mentor for a lot of years now in my own life, and the Resound Network has more recently just been a great source of encouragement for me and my wife in our ministry. And so even though I would bet many of you could not find Basalt, Colorado on a map, and I would for sure win that bet, by the way, Central Church, this congregation, has directly impacted folks that you do not know and you may not ever meet on this side of glory. And I just love that about the church. I love the connectionalism of it. I love that we're united as one, but even more than connection, I love the kingdom-mindedness. I love the missional spirit, the way one body in New York City can feed another spiritually through encouragement and generosity across the country. And in many ways, it's this spirit of mission that's the theme of our passage this morning. But before I read that for you, and before we jump into the text, let me tell you a story from the Wild West, my favorite story, because I'm from the Wild West. Here's a story from the Wild West, all right? So in 1804, President Jefferson sent Lewis and Clark and their team of 35 intrepid explorers and one dog to discover a route across the North American continent. These were boatloads of just mountain dudes. Okay, these guys were just outdoorsmen. They were tough, as the kids say today. They were hoping for a continuous water route across the country, of course. They did not find that. They started in St. Louis. They rode up the Missouri until it petered out in the Bitterroot Mountains of Montana, at which point they left their boats behind and just started walking west. Once they went over the pass, they came down the other side, and at the first sight of water, they chopped down trees, and they made their own canoes out of trees by hand, jumped back in the water, and started bombing their way towards the coast. There is this incredible scene that Stephen Ambrose records in his book, Undaunted Courage. As they began to descend this river, they hit a series of rapids. Again, homemade canoes. They just cut down these trees. Today, these rapids are Class 6 rapids, which makes them illegal to raft commercially. They are so dangerous, all right? But these guys, in their homemade boats, bombed down the rapids, and the story goes that the native tribes of the Pacific Northwest just stood on the cliffs watching these guys so that when they inevitably died, they could just take all their stuff. But they didn't die. They made it through. And as they continued to go down, they made their way down the Columbia River to the Pacific coast, not knowing how long or how far they had to go. Now let me pause the story right there. And I want you to imagine for a minute that you're in the boat with them, and you're on the Columbia, and you're meandering your way west. You have been traveling for over a year. You have been cold on land. You have been cold on water. You have been hot on the plains. You have climbed mountains. You have encountered hostile tribes. You've encountered friendly tribes. You have almost died multiple times. And now you're on a river in uncharted territory, totally off the map. This has not been mapped before. And one of the questions you have to be asking in your heart is, how much longer do we have to go? Where is this place? How far do we have to go? There's no GPS. There's no estimated time of arrival. You're looking for signs as you go. You're looking for signs that you're on the right track. You're looking for signs that you're getting close. You're looking for signs of hope and signs of the future. Until one day, a member of your team sticks his Nalgene, or whatever the 1804 equivalent of a Nalgene was, into the river, and he takes a drink of water, and he tastes something that tells him the future. Do you know what he tasted? He tasted salt, didn't he? As you get close to the ocean, the river actually pulls ocean water up into the river, and you can taste the salt long before you can see the ocean that it came from. And at this moment, the core of discovery, they found themselves between two worlds, didn't they? They had not yet fully left the river world that they had been traveling for so long, and they had not yet fully entered the ocean world that they'd been dreaming for and hoping for so long. They were in the messy middle. They were in the middle where these two things overlapped and melded and kind of mixed together. But they knew now that they were close, the sign of their certain future was all around them. And what I love about this story is that long before they could see the ocean or hear the ocean or feel the ocean or even smell the ocean, they could taste it, couldn't they? The first sign of the future that got pulled into their present life was a taste. It brings a whole new level of meaning to Psalm 34:8. Taste and see that the Lord is good. When Jesus came to earth, the Gospel of Mark tells us that he came proclaiming the gospel of his kingdom. Jesus came to bring his future reign, his future heaven into our world. He pulled the future in with him. And when he did, he proclaimed it. He taught about it. But he did more than that. He also came to give us a taste of what that future is going to be like. In fact, the gospel writer John calls the miracles of Jesus that he records in his gospel signs. These are signs of your future, signs of the coming kingdom that Jesus came to establish. He pulled the future world of heaven into our world in ways we can taste and see. In a world where many of us feel that we are traveling or maybe have traveled right off the map of the known world, it can be a little confusing out there at times. We're not sure where things are heading. And many of us have endured many difficulties on the journey so far. And yet, I still think many of us believe the future is bright. There is a glorious future waiting for us. There is a heaven that awaits us. The shining sea is out there somewhere. But one of the questions that haunts our hearts, just like it haunted the explorers' hearts, is how long? And are we on the right track? And are we close? And are there signs that we're heading in the right direction? Our passage this morning is one of the signs that Jesus gives his people, his followers, to give us a taste of what his future that awaits us is like. When he came into the world, he gave miracles to give us a taste of our journey to heaven. Here's one of them. Mark 6, verses 30 to 44. Let me read for us. If you'd like to follow along, it's on page 10 of your bulletin. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest for a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and gathered there ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place. The hour is late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But Jesus answered them, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Well, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?" And he said to them, "Well, how many loaves do you have? Go and see." And when they had found out, they said, "Five and two fish." And then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and by fifties. And taking the five loaves and the two fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the two fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces and of the fish, and those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Here's what I want to show you this morning. Two things. When Jesus pulls his future kingdom from the future into our present to give us a taste of what it's like to be with him under his reign, he does two things. He provides us a kingdom meal, and then he sends us on a kingdom mission. All right, that's where we're headed. First up, kingdom meal. Verse 31, Jesus invited his disciples to a desolate place so they could rest a while. And they went away in a boat to a desolate place all by themselves. Verse 32, this was an area north of the Sea of Galilee. This was far from the lush green hills of Jerusalem in the south. This was a barren land. This was the desert. This was the sticks. This was the wilderness. And into this desolate wilderness comes a huge crowd of people following Jesus. 5,000 men, the text tells us, which is the Bible's way of saying 5,000 families, okay? So once you include kids and grandma and grandpa and auntie and uncle, let's just call it 20,000 people, okay? 20,000 people show up to crash the guys' retreat with Jesus because they had already gotten a small taste of Jesus. And wherever Jesus was, that's where they wanted to be too. They didn't know what was going to happen. They had no expectation, but they knew they wanted to be near Jesus. So when he saw a great crowd, instead of being harsh or dismissive that he interrupted their retreat, it says he had compassion on them because this is the very heart of Jesus. They were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. He taught them of his kingdom. He taught them of his reign. He taught them of the gospel that they could receive him. And as he teaches them these things, he does more than just teach them. He is about to show them what this kingdom is like as well. He doesn't just use words. He demonstrates the future. But they have a problem. It's getting late, and no one brought a picnic. So Mark 6, 35, when it grew late, his disciples came to him, and they said, okay, this is a desolate place. There's nothing to eat here. The circumstances are not conducive to 20,000 people having a meal. And so let's send them away to go into the surrounding country and the villages and buy themselves something to eat. Here's the thing. Our human impulse, my human impulse, yours too, is that to make things better in my life, I need to fix the circumstances of my life. In other words, I need greener pastures if I'm going to be satisfied. I need more food if I'm going to be full. I need more resources in my bank account if I'm going to finally feel at peace and at rest in this world. This was the disciples' impulse too. The people are hungry. The circumstances are not conducive to a good meal. Send them away to find nourishment and satisfaction that they need. They need better circumstances. But this is what I want you to catch. Look at this. Instead of sending people away from himself to greener pastures to be satisfied, Jesus, the King, shows us that satisfaction and fullness is always found in himself. Wherever Jesus is, even in the middle of a desert, that's where you get filled. That's when you're near Jesus, you're full, no matter the circumstances that surround you. Verse 42 is an amazing verse. They all ate and were satisfied. Jesus took the meager human offering, the meager human resources that were available, 5 loaves, 2 fish, and 20,000 full bellies emerged. 20,000 satiated human beings, 20,000 satisfied souls. Wherever Jesus is, that is where we get what we need and all we could ever want. This is exactly where we are fully satisfied, even in the middle of a wilderness. Did you know this miracle is the only miracle that is recorded in all 4 gospel accounts in the New Testament? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Jesus did many, many things, and he taught many, many things, and the different gospel writers record them differently, but they all picked this one, and this is the only one that they all picked. We don't know why that is, but they all felt they had to include it because there is just something about this miracle, isn't there? Something central to what Jesus came to do, something emblematic about his mission. Jesus feeds his people a satisfying meal right in the middle of a barren desert. Do you need to be satisfied? What are your circumstances in life like right now? When the circumstances are meager, and the human resources are meager, and the money's meager, and our human impulse says, let's go away and find better circumstances to be full, Jesus says, right there, don't leave, stay with me. If you're hungry, Jesus meets us with his fullness. This is how God has always treated his people. When he saved them from Egypt, he sent them into the wilderness. They wandered for 40 years in a barren land, and he daily fed them with his food from heaven, manna from heaven every single day. This is how God teaches us to pray. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Okay, so when the kingdom of heaven gets pulled into our earth and we get a taste of it, when the future reign of Jesus gets pulled into our present world, how does it look? What does it feel like? What's the next line in the prayer? Give us this day our daily bread, a satisfying meal from God. This is actually how God calls us to respond to him in faith today as well. We don't tend to think of America in 2025 as a desert wilderness. By and large, we are very well provided for. We are globally wealthy. We have many resources available to us, from food to healthcare to education. But we do live in a world of hunger, and I think a lot of us know it deep down. Even in the neighborhoods where there's enough food, We're still unsatisfied. We're still hungry for things like deep community, spiritual friendship, true intimacy. In fact, some of the most well-resourced places in the nation are also the places where there are the highest rates of mental unhealth, the highest addiction rates, the highest divorce rates. This is true of where I live in Colorado, in Aspen, Colorado, one of the healthiest physically places in the nation, one of the most unhealthy emotional and spiritual places in the nation. The richest and most successful around us are often plagued with a desert of the soul, a wilderness of hunger and need. In fact, I need to be reminded of this so often that I actually keep a running document on my computer called Dispatches from the Other Side. Okay, so the tendency in my own heart, maybe like yours, is to think when I get hungry and I feel like I need something more in life, I need to fix my circumstances. I need a better set of, you know, circumstances to help nourish the hunger that I'm feeling. And the thing is, though, there are folks out there who have all of the circumstances I could ever dream of, right? They have all the wealth, they have all the beauty, they have all the power, the influence that I could ever dream of. They live in this land of perfect circumstances, and every once in a while, they write back and they tell the rest of us what it's like where they live, okay? And do you know what the universal report is from the land of perfect circumstances? Dispatches from the other side, the place we all think that we want to live so that our life would be better and more satisfied. Do you know what every single person says who lives there? There's not enough there. There's still not enough there. Everyone who reports back from this mythical land where everything seems perfect tells us it's still a wilderness of the soul. Maybe you've heard some of these. Jim Carrey, "I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so that they can see it's not the answer." Or consider Mariah Carey, not related. At the time of this interview, she had more number one hits than anyone in the history of music except for the Beatles and Elvis. She was dating Derek Jeter at the top of her game. Barbara Walters interviews her and says, "Is there anything left for you to achieve, Mariah?" Do you know what her one-word answer was? Happiness. The one thing left to achieve is happiness. John D. Rockefeller, country's first billionaire, when he was interviewed, "What is the one thing you wish you knew before you got started?" He said, "I wish someone had told me that when you get to the top, there is nothing there and you're still all alone." Most recently, the world's undisputed number one golfer, Scottie Scheffler, before he went on to win the British Open. You guys probably saw the interview. If not, go look it up. It's incredible. He said this when he was asked about his achievements in golf. "What is the point? This is not a fulfilling life. It's fulfilling from a sense of accomplishment, but it's not fulfilling from a sense of the deepest places of your heart. This is not the place to look for your satisfaction." These are folks that have it all. These are folks that have everything that the rest of us normies dream we could have. You know what I mean? The land of perfect circumstances. And it's not that these are not good gifts to be enjoyed. They absolutely are. The world is filled with good gifts of God's creation that he wants you to enjoy. But they're just not enough to bear the weight of your soul, because your soul was made for another world. The disciples say, and our hearts tend to agree, that when we get hungry for something bigger or deeper or better, that we need to find new circumstances. We need to go away from Jesus to find the right set of circumstances. Jesus says, "No, keep everyone right here where I am. I have something better. I am something better." Because the poverties that we experience in this world are exactly the poverties that the riches of the gospel came to address. The hungers we feel in our soul are exactly the food and the feast that Jesus' kingdom is meant to satisfy. The new kingdom that Jesus established when he paid for our sins on the cross and was raised to new life and reigns over all things. He ascended to his throne. And these are gifts, these are resources that are available to you to receive and to enjoy and to feast on even now. His future kingdom does not stay put in the future. He pulls these things back up into our world and gives them to us as a taste of his kingdom today. He offers a home to the homeless. He offers healing from past wounds, those that you have done and those that have been done to you. He offers a new community. He offers a way through the shame and the guilt of sin into true freedom. He offers deep meaning and mission for our lives. These are the things we're hungry for. He offers abundant joy even in the midst of the world's troubles. Jesus is the one who provides what you need. He doesn't take you out of the wilderness necessarily. Your circumstances may not change, but he joins you wherever you are, in whatever wilderness you may face in this world, and he sustains you there. He feeds you a rich meal where you already are with the generosity of his grace. So when you're hungry for more of something, central, when you're hungry for that thing that you feel like you're just not getting, don't go searching for better circumstances. You're not going to find it there. It is not enough to carry the weight of your soul. Stick with Jesus. Feast on his word, his food. The promise of the gospel is that Jesus will satisfy you completely. But notice this. If we read closely, we see that Jesus actually intends to have some help as he feeds a hungry world. Verse 36, the disciples say, send them away to go to the surrounding countryside and the villages and buy themselves something to eat. But Jesus answered, I got a different idea. You give them something to eat. How many loaves do you have? Go and check it out. Jesus does not create a meal out of thin air. He absolutely could. He created the cosmos out of nothing. Instead, he uses whatever resources that his followers can offer up to him open-handed, and then he invites his disciples to join him in meal prep, all right, for a hungry world. Jesus is going out of his way to involve his own people in his mission to feed a hungry world. So for the last few minutes here, let's consider not only the kingdom meal that Jesus offers, but the kingdom mission that Jesus sends his people on as well. If you're curious about Christianity, maybe you're here today and you're investigating the claims of Jesus, welcome. I'm really glad that you're here. If you're trying to figure out if this is true, if this kind of makes sense of the world you live in, here, in a word, is the heart of Christianity. You can sum it up in two commands. Christianity calls you to feast, and it calls you to feed, okay? Feast on the free meal of grace provided to you in the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus. He has provided all you need, and he is giving it to you for free before you do a single thing to please him or earn it. It's all free. It's all of grace. Receive his gifts. Rest in them. Feast on them. Enjoy them. And then turn right around and give them all away to those that you also know are hungry in this world. Feed your family, your neighbors, and the world out of the riches with which you have been fed by Jesus. It's Christianity in a nutshell. Tim Chester is a pastor in London, and he wrote a great little book called Meals with Jesus. And he calls this Jesus' theology of leftovers. I think it's a great phrase. He says, in the Old Testament, if the Israelites acted as if the manna, the daily bread, was a limited resource that must be hoarded, it went bad. You could not keep it from one day to the next. You could only consume it and enjoy it and be fed by it by trusting it to be an infinite resource from God that would always be available whenever you needed it. If the disciples in our story tried to hoard the meager meal in this desert, 5 pieces of bread, 2 fish, there wouldn't even have been enough for the 12 of them to get a real meal. But by entrusting all they had into the hands of Jesus, giving it all away as a gift, just as they had received it, there was not only enough for everyone to be satisfied, 20,000 full bellies, but there were actually more leftovers at the end than the amount of food they started with. There were 12 basketfuls of leftovers, one for each of the disciples. I'm sure Jesus was showing them, look, guys, this is how my kingdom works. This is a theology of leftovers. It is a kingdom of abundance. It's the new law of Jesus' future and the economics of his kingdom that he is pulling into our present world. The more you try to protect what you have, hold on tight out of fear of losing it, the less there's to give. The more grace you give to your family, your friends, your neighbors, the emptier your hands are to receive again the grace from your Father that we all need every single day. It is the law of the counterintuitive, upside-down kingdom of God. And if you're a citizen of that kingdom, if you call Jesus your king, if you're considering calling him your king, this is your mission, to give generously away that which you've been given. Give to the church and to the poor. Be generous because your Father in heaven is generous. Give away your hospitality, your time, your service. Give away your community. This is one we don't think about very often. extend your friendships, your networks, your relationships to others as a gift. I can tend to think I have friends and I enjoy them very much and I don't really want more people in this circle because it seems like it's going to get complicated and I don't want to mess up the really good thing I have going here. Maybe you have felt something like that before, but here's the thing. Christian community is one of the beautiful gifts of God's kingdom that is meant to be shared, and when we try to hoard it, it ends up going bad. Our world is hungry, starving for deep, intimate connections, for spiritual friendships, for folks to journey alongside with through the travails of this world. And we have a gift that is meant to be given generously. We were once outsiders to God, and he brought us into his community. Feast on that relationship that you have with him, enjoy it, and then extend it to others. Give it away. Central has actually been a church that feeds the greater kingdom beyond itself, out of its resources and out of its generosity. It has blessed my life personally. It has blessed churches around the country. I know this. My question for you is, how might you personally or your family do the same? How might you give of what you have been given to your friends, your colleagues, with the same gospel that you enjoy so richly in Jesus Christ? Let me close with a final quote here, or a final story. So in the final pages of the Chronicles of Narnia, in the last battle, the last book, everyone has arrived in Aslan's country. So they have been journeying, you know, just like the explorers, they've been journeying across lands that were sometimes very difficult, sometimes very hard, but they finally arrived at the shining sea of Aslan's country. And Lucy is speaking with her oldest friend in Narnia, Mr. Tumnus, the fawn. "I see," she said at last, thoughtfully. "I see now. This garden, it's like the stable that we just came out of. It's far bigger on the inside than it was on the outside." "Oh, of course, daughter of Eve," said the fawn. "The further up and the further in you go, the bigger everything gets. The inside is larger than the outside." "Oh, I see," she says. "This is still Narnia, and it's more real and it's more beautiful than the Narnia down below, just as it was more real and more beautiful than the Narnia outside the stable door. I see it. It's a world within a world. It's a Narnia within Narnia." "Yes," said Mr. Tumnus, "it's like an onion, except that as you continue to go in and in, each circle is larger than the last." That is a theology of leftovers. That is how the kingdom of God works. It is a country where the farther in and the farther up you go, there's not less and less to enjoy of Christ and his gifts and his resources and his abundance and his generosity, but more and more. The inside is larger than the outside. There is always more satisfaction and joy in Jesus than we even knew existed when we began the journey, and that will always be true into eternity, forever. Feast on the gifts of the gospel. Feed the hungry in our world.